You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. For survivors of cancer, June 6th is a day to mark on the calendar. It's National Cancer Survivors Day, remembered here in Juno with a walk from Marine Park to the Whale Statue. Cancer Connection, which provides support to those living with cancer, has organized this event. And joining us now to tell us what this day means to her, a cancer survivor, Julie Hamilton, also a member of Cancer Connection. Welcome, Julie.
Hi, thanks so much.
You're welcome. Julie, would you like to tell me about how you got involved with Cancer Connection?
Sure, yes. I'd love to share my story. I was diagnosed with cancer right before I turned 50 years old. This was about 4.5 years ago. And I had also been sort of touched by cancer in a very unfortunate way with my mother passing away from breast cancer when she was 55. So it had always been something in the back of my head. I'd always been very careful, had all my screenings done, but then I had still was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2016. So I had surgery, had great support through Swedish. I had an early diagnosis, which was very, very lucky for me. But when I came back, you know, I was still sort of going through the process of recovery and sort of, you know, I didn't have a lot of friends who had gone through this type of thing. So I found Cancer Connection sort of after the fact, whereas now that I'm more involved with Cancer Connection, I see that, you know, we have a lot on the front end too that can help. But I went to one of their support group meetings with another person who I'd met through cancer treatment and just felt like it really has a lot to offer our community. And so through that, through the support group meetings, I then said, well, you know, I could help on the board if you need any help. I'm an accountant by trade. And so if you need a treasurer, that's my specialty. And so that's my story. And I'm about 5 years out from my surgery. And I'm definitely a cancer survivor.
What's important about having a group like Cancer Connection here in Juneau? What are some of the things they provide?
Well, Cancer Connection is a very grassroots, local. When I say local, like a lot of people, you know, it's Southeast really that we try to support. But one of the very great things that we do is we give information to newly diagnosed cancer patients. We can help with. We have a library with a lot of books and magazines. We can help point people in the right direction. Sometimes the doctors are, you know, doctors get really busy and they don't have all the answers for support. We do one thing when you're newly diagnosed that I really like that we can do is something called our Let's Talk program. So somebody can call us and we can connect you with a survivor of that same cancer that you're diagnosed with, so you can get together. I've done meetings with breast cancer diagnosed individuals in town here where I just meet with them for tea or coffee, and we, you know, I can answer questions because I've been through it. So that's a great program we have. We do some financial support. We can help reimburse people who have to travel for cancer treatment. We have an apartment in Seattle that we rent the apartment, and then we subsidize it. You know, living in downtown Seattle is not cheap, whether you're in a hotel or an apartment, but the apartment is available to people receiving treatment down in Seattle, and it's right near Swedish and Harborview and Virginia Mason. And it can be short-term rental, long-term rental. It's very, it's a great little apartment right downtown for a decent price. And so we do some other things too. Of course, we do our this coming up, our National Cancer Survivors Day event, and we do a annual wellness forum that usually is at the Centennial Hall, and it includes a speaker and a lunch. And last year, because of COVID, we had it online, and the speaker was Keegan Randall, who's an Olympic star who has gone through cancer, and her talk from that is still posted on our website for people to watch. It was an amazing talk by Keegan Randall, and it's at cancerconnectionak.org. That's our website. And our website also has all of our programs listed there. There's a yoga that happens every Saturday at 10 a.m. right now, of course, on Zoom. But we have all kinds of programs to help survivors, newly diagnosed, family members, and, you know, friends too.
What a great resource. So how do you like to celebrate National Cancer Survivors Day?
Well, we've done it in different ways over the years. And last year, we didn't really do anything because of COVID. It's always the first Sunday in June, and it is celebrated worldwide. It's celebrated in different ways. It's really interesting to go to the National Cancer Survivors Day website, because they have really interesting ways that people celebrate National Cancer Survivors Day on this first Sunday of June. And people sometimes do parades. They do, I just was reading about one in California, I think San Diego, where a group is going to have painting on the beach. Doesn't that sound nice right now in rainy June?
Watercolors, perhaps?
So here in Juneau, we've done things. We've had evening auction band dinner type of things. We've had walks with lunches. That's what we're doing this year, a walk from Marine Park to the Bill Overstreet Whale Park on Sunday with a box lunch available too. So we've done different things. People do different things. The important thing is really celebrating life, celebrating survivors. I always think when I'm doing Cancer Connection, I always, like to remember my mom, who was a wonderful person, and remember her, and, know that she'd be happy. I'm a survivor. So.
Yeah, I did want to ask about that. It's always a celebration when someone overcomes cancer, of course, but what about all the ones we've lost, and how is this a day to both celebrate and remember?
Yes, and we do that. Our annual fund, our biggest fundraiser, it's really our only fundraiser for Cancer Connection, is the Beat the Odds race. And we do that every year. I think this year it's August 21st. And at that event, we do have little stickers and pens for people to do in memorial sort of things to like, I wear a heart for my mom when we have that race. But I think that whenever we're talking about National Cancer Survivors Days, we can always think about, the people that we really wish had survived. And, resources are getting better and better all the time. Medicine's getting better and better all the time. So, we're getting more and more survivors. I think in the U.S. alone, there's around 17 million, I think, in the way of survivors in the United States right now.
And what are some of the ways that a walk is a good symbol for celebrating Cancer Survivors Day?
Well, there's a couple of things we want to think about while we're doing this walk. One, we're gathering, we're support for each other, all of our survivors, as well as our friends and family. We want the community to see us. We want them to recognize it is a Survivors Day. If they see us walking, honk, wave, we'll be carrying a sign that it will be a sort of a long stream of people from that end of town to the whale. And it really, we want to be inspiration during this walk for newly diagnosed. We want to support each other. We want the community to see us, and we want to celebrate life. We should be doing that every day, of course, but this is one specifically to celebrate survivors and celebrate life. But it's just of course, we always know that health and fitness is a good way to maintain, to sort of push off cancer, but it doesn't always work. Like you could see in Keegan Randall's speech, she was one of the healthiest, fittest people around and was diagnosed with cancer. But, getting fresh air, getting out, getting a walk is always good no matter what. But yeah, we want to be seen, and we want to support each other.
Well, when and where will the walk take place, and how do we sign up and participate?
Okay, well, there's no pre-registration. It's this Sunday, June 6th. And we want people to show up at Marine Park around 11:15 on Sunday morning and sign in. You can sign in there. And part of the sign-in is really about COVID mitigation and if anything should happen, right? We want to still be safe in this world of COVID. So we want people to sign in around 11:15. We'll gather and start walking around 11:30 from Marine Park over to the Whale Park. And so we think it's important to stay on that side of the street. There's some construction going on. And so we're going to all stay on one side of the street, end up at the Whale Park, and we can go along that boardwalk at the end there, that really nice new boardwalk on the water side. End up at the Whale Park around noon. We will do a little bit of talk, and we will have some box lunches from V's Cellar Doors. We have only so many box lunches, but we will also have some snacks in case we run out, and we'll have water at the beginning and at the end of the walk too.
Oh, excellent. Sounds like a lot of fun. Anything else coming up for Cancer Connection that you'd like to talk about while you're here, Julie?
No, I mean, the Beat the Odds race, which is always a fun little run, is going to happen this year in person. Last year, because of COVID, it happened, but it was over a course of a week and people did their own little runs. It wasn't a get together type of thing. And it's always fun too, because we'll have speakers and we will have a lot of door prizes, some really, really good door prizes every year. And so that, I believe, is August 21st. And besides that, we have, if anybody's interested in our services, they can go to our website, cancerconnectionak.org, look at all of our programs, just click on the programs link. If you're interested in the yoga really helped me after I had surgery for cancer. It helped me get my, between physical therapy and yoga, I got my full range of motion back. And so we've got that. If anybody, of course, wants to donate, there's a little donate button on our website. So we're just there for everyone, and feel free to call us. We have a cell phone that is on 24/7. If anybody needs something that's outside of sort of office hours, we have a half-time office administrator. So sometimes that phone doesn't answer. So it'll go to our cell phone, which one of our board members always has and is available for any questions or resource referrals or things like that.
Julie Hamilton of Cancer Connection, it's been lovely to talk with you today. So thank you for sharing all of that great info about the walk and about Cancer Connection. Thank you for wearing your KTOO hoodie and supporting public radio today. Anything else you'd like to share before we say goodbye?
Nope, you guys are awesome. And thanks for having us on here. And I hope it'll be sunny and hot on Sunday when we do our walk.
I hope you have a great walk on Sunday. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and my next guest is Nico Sanguinetti, curator of collections and exhibits for the Juno Douglas City Museum. Hello, Nico.
Hi, Shelley. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks.
Thanks for being here today. You're here to give us an update on the City Museum's activities for this month, for this summer. Let's start with this first Friday. Free admission, a free special tour, and a preview of a new little project. Tell us all about it.
Definitely. We're pretty excited. It's going to be our first Friday in quite some time. So we are excited to be open later. So we'll be open from 4 to 6:30, and it is free admission. And we're going to be offering behind the scenes tours of our collection storage area, actually led by me. And they're going to leave every half hour from 4 to 6, with the last tour being at 6 o'clock. There's going to be 8 spots per tour, and it is first come, first serve, and we'll have a sign-up sheet on the desk that night. So if you're interested in seeing the areas that most visitors don't get to see in our museum, this is the perfect opportunity for you, so I'm pretty excited about that. And our other exciting update is that we are, especially our director, Beth Weigel, has been working very hard on a new little project called the Free Little Museum, which is going to be going up on the side of our building, which is going to be a community effort for creating art in town. And so we're going to be distributing one canvas per person, but we've got free canvases here to encourage our community members to create their own pieces of art. And the museum is going, the little museum is going to be going up most likely next week. And the goal is to have a space kind of like the free little libraries that exist around town, with the idea of instead of books, it'll be pieces of art. And so they'll, somebody will put in a piece of art and you can take one and replace it. So I'm excited to see what kind of art our community is able to produce, because we have a lot of both professional and amateur artists that are extremely talented around town. So we're pretty excited about that.
Okay, I have a lot of follow-up questions. So I'm going to take a step back to the behind-the-scenes tour and just ask quickly if there's anything you'd like to tease on that. Like, what are some things that you think people might be really curious about to see behind the scenes?
I think most people don't really think about where objects go that aren't on display. And most people think that what is on display in a museum gallery is the majority of a museum's collection. And that's actually not true. Most museums only have about 10 to 20% of their collections on display. So that's 80% of their collections are in areas that the public doesn't get to see. So I think that people might be excited to and will be surprised, I think, to see what our collections actually encompass. And while there's no way they'll be able to see everything, it's really a view behind the curtain that most people don't get to see. So I'm kind of excited to share that with everyone.
Thank you. And then about the Little Free Museum. Let me make sure I have this right. Like, people can put up something, but they don't necessarily get it back because other people can take it and put up something else. Is that right?
That is correct. So it'll be kind of a circulating library, more or less, but with art instead of books.
And that's on the outside of the City Museum. So artwork needs to be somewhat weatherproof?
No, it'll be actually inside of a case. And the case is what we're going to be kind of revealing at First Friday at the end of this week. So people will get to see what the new home is going to look like. And it's going to be in an area that has an overhang, so it will be mostly protected. But it's going to be small, so no pieces larger than 8 inches by 8 inches. And we're distributing canvases, but they don't necessarily have to be something that's two-dimensional or painted. If somebody wants to put a mobile up in there or a sculpture or something like that, we don't quite have designated rules for it yet, and we're hoping that the community gets into it and raises themselves to the challenge and seeing what they can create and put in there.
And so you said you guys have canvases. Are those something that you can pick up anytime, or should we come on First Friday?
They're going to be here for First Friday for people who are interested and wanting to create their own pieces of art.
Is there anything that's ready to go that will be put in the display immediately?
Not right away, at least not as of right this second, but our goal is by next week to have something that goes into the museum.
What a fabulous idea. I love it. Please pass along my compliments to Beth. What a great idea.
Definitely. Well, we all really love the free libraries around town, so thought it would be a fun little experiment and a new way that we can bring the museum to the community in a different way. And also, because there's so much conversation about accessibility with museums, this is an interesting way too of getting more pieces kind of in, but also out. And just another way we can be part of the community, which that we love so much.
That sounds like so much fun. All right. Well, I look forward to checking that out. And while I'm on the topic of walking by the City Museum is also offering a number of walking tours this summer. Those are always fun and popular, especially the true crime walking tours. So can you tell us a bit more about those?
Definitely. So our True Crime Capital Killers walking tours are beginning on June 19th. And we'll also be having additional tours on July 24th and August 21st. And they are led by Ed Schoenfeld and Betsy Loganbaugh, who are extremely knowledgeable. And they're a very different way to view Juneau history, mostly through historical, mostly murders and case and court cases. So it's always fun to see Juneau history presented through a different lens. And they're absolutely fantastic at what they do. And they've spent years researching all these various crimes. And even though that we did do similar tours last summer, they're always unearthing new crimes. And so each tour will be a little bit different. So if people did take the tours last summer, there's always a good chance that if they come on one this summer, it'll be completely different because Ed and Betsy are always evolving and presenting new stories, which is so fun.
Last summer, it was difficult to get tickets. Are there tickets still available for the true crime walking tours?
We currently do still have tickets available, but I would recommend calling sooner rather than later because they are starting to fill up even through August.
I'm not surprised. And there's other walking tours available, too, if you're not into the whole true crime thing or if you can't get a ticket. Do you want to tell us about those?
Definitely. So we also have our weekly historic downtown Juneau walking tours, which are led by our extremely knowledgeable team of volunteers here at the museum. And we have those every day at 10 o'clock, Thursday through Sunday. And the same thing, reservations can be made in advance, or they can take their chances and come in on one of those days. And they are a lot of fun and are walking tours around Juneau with various aspects of history, culture, and art. And what I find so fun about those is they all vary depending on who's leading them. So they're always unique and always personal because they're led by locals. So we have a lot of fun with that.
Oh, it sounds great. Lots ahead for the summer out of the City Museum. And then another thing of note is your Echoes of War exhibit open through 2021. Is there any updates or anything else you'd like to share about that exhibit? We've talked about it a lot on this show, but I know there's people out there who still haven't seen it.
Definitely. So it'll be up through October of this year. So it's in its final run. So if you haven't seen it, we recommend coming down and giving it a look. It is now officially an award-winning exhibit, which we're really proud of. And we do have a newer touchscreen that is part of it. So if you haven't had a chance to check that out, that's a lot of fun. And just in general, we're excited to be able to show that exhibit to people because of, as with many things with COVID, we were shut so much of last year. So we're looking forward to continuing to share that story with more people. And we're happy that we're able to keep it up through the summer.
Great. Nico Sanguinetti, thank you so much for being here with me today from the Juneau Douglas City Museum. I really appreciate you sharing all the information and details about all the activities you've got coming up. Such a packed summer of great events. So thank you for doing what you do. Is there anything else you want to share with us today?
Sure. I would just like to add that our summer schedule has changed just a little bit. So we're now going to be open Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So most of the days of the week from 10 to 4. And we're really looking forward to an action-packed summer. So keep your eyes on our Facebook and website, and we'll be bringing out new things, hopefully quite often this summer.
I'm so happy to hear that. Well, thanks again for being with me today, Nico.
Thank you for having me. Have a great day.
You as well. You're listening to Juneau Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney, and my next guest is Lieutenant Jeremy Weske with the Juneau Police Department. Welcome to the show, Lieutenant.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, let's start with an introduction. You were born and raised here in Juneau, Alaska. How long have you been working in law enforcement?
It's going to be about 15 years in 1 month.
And do you still use your radio flyer wagon for hauling paperwork?
Yes, you've heard the story. I did get rid of that, although I have a real small version of it here on my desk that I keep around for posterity.
Aw. Well, before we talk about the usual updates, I wanted to congratulate you. You recently graduated from the FBI National Academy in Quantico, Virginia. What was that experience like for you?
It was pretty incredible. Selfishly, I got to spend 15 weeks in what was a lot like freshman year of college. You know, you roomed together, you were in dorm style housing, and it was a great time. Met a lot of really good people, and got to spend a lot of time with them, because you're there by yourself. But beyond that, it was a really good time to network with other people who were in the same position as me, who had been in this career for a lot longer than I had a lot more experience than I had. And then you went to school. It was like going to college. You had classes every day. And so I got to take all classes in leadership, in investigating certain types of crimes, in management specific issues, and it was really great. They had speakers come once a week, and some pretty big names in our fields that came and talked to us and gave us some insight, and I really enjoyed it. And I was lucky because I ended up going for the last class before COVID really hit, and I don't think it's been the same since then, so I feel lucky to have gone.
I understand that coursework on cyber terrorism was included in the program, and in the headlines today there was a story about a ransomware attack on the Steamship Authority of Massachusetts. I was just wondering, what are your thoughts on the likelihood of an attack like that on Juno, and are we prepared?
Well, I think we have already experienced some of those attacks. I know the city has dealt with some phishing attacks, and coincidentally, we got an email this morning about another one. So we take a training every year, I think it is, that takes us through what to look for, what to be careful of, and I think people have gotten a lot better, but it's something in our day and age that we're constantly having to be worried about. If it's not an email, it's a phone call from someone who's claiming to be a government agent and wanting money from you. So we all have to be really vigilant and make sure that we're verifying the information that we're hearing or seeing.
Well, it sounds like we'll be, it sounds like some of that stuff, it sounds like the course that you took at Quantico maybe have updated you and some of the latest on the technologies to combat attacks like that.
Yeah, they had good information, and I'm no expert, believe me, but I know enough at least not to get in trouble, hopefully.
Another thing I wanted to ask you about related to that training, the relationship between government authority and law enforcement and Black and Native communities, it's also been in the headlines a lot lately, although the history there is nothing new. How did they address that at the FBI Academy?
We had some really frank discussions in classes. There were people from all backgrounds, from all cultures in there, and we got to listen to a lot of different experiences. There wasn't a lot of back and forth. The people who were there understood the issues that we have as a nation, the issues that we're seeing pop up as a profession. And so it was more of a time to reflect and get some really good insight from people who had lived it themselves and who were able to provide us guidance on things that we can do better.
Did you feel like it was valuable for you? Did you learn anything new?
Yeah, it's incredibly invaluable, incredibly valuable. I always am interested in hearing those stories. You and I are on Zoom, but nobody else can see me. I'm a white middle-aged male. I don't have a lot of experiences myself, you know, where my culture was an issue for a group that I went into. I'm obviously in the majority. So anytime I can listen to other people talk about those things, whether it's work or people that I know personally, I'm interested in that because I haven't had that viewpoint. I think that's incredibly important to have, to see that other side and to know what other people have gone through.
Yeah, I agree. Well, thanks for answering that. On another topic, Memorial Day weekend, as well as graduations, are behind us now. Are there any important updates or lessons learned that you'd like to impart to the public?
It was a good weekend. It was busy. We did have some bigger calls come in, but the things that we worry about most on Memorial Day are DUIs, young adults drinking and driving, those who just graduated. We've seen some parties that have ended up with some tragic endings, and we did not see that. We didn't have a lot of DUIs. We had a few complaints. We had one DUI arrest over the weekend, but for the most part, all that was really good, and we're very appreciative of that, and that we didn't have anything, any life-changing events that happened for the young people in our town or the older. So that was great. My apologies.
That's okay.
Outside of that, we had an assault case that happened downtown that we dealt with, and then just some of the run-of-the-mill cases that we deal with. But the weekend was good. All in all, it was good.
And I don't know if we'll have you on again or somebody else from JPD on again before the 4th of July. So what would you like to share as that big explosive holiday approaches?
Well, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to getting back to a sense of normalcy. We didn't have a 4th of July parade last year, or a Douglas parade last year, and I think the community is looking forward to it. One thing that I've learned as while we planned our response to the 4th of July is that because it's happening on a Sunday this year, the parades are pushed back an hour. So that's something the public might want to know about that I wouldn't have known about otherwise. Outside of that, the city recently enacted a new fireworks ordinance that I think the public would like to know about. And I'm happy to share some details on that if you'd like.
Absolutely. What are the new rules?
So the biggest change for people relates to concussive fireworks. Those are the big, loud, booming ones that we're all familiar with. For those, they are not allowed inside the fire service area, which pretty much extends from Cohen Drive out the road, and then anywhere where you get fire service would be considered the fire service area. So there are limited areas where you can use concussive fireworks, and if you do use it outside of the fire service area, it has to be on private property or public property that's been designated as an area where you can use fireworks. Currently, I don't know of any public properties that are designated as areas you can use fireworks. So for the concussive fireworks, you're talking about anything with an inner tube larger than 3/4 inch, or anything that you can put mortar rounds or mines into. Outside of that, you're going to have kind of the same fireworks inside the fire service area, all the ones that we're used to on the 4th of July. Nothing with that has changed. And then the other two pieces of the ordinance that might be of interest are, one, you can now legally buy fireworks in the city as long as you're buying them from a permitted supplier or permitted seller. And two, when you're buying those fireworks, just beware that you can't possess more than 75 pounds of gross weight of fireworks. So keep it under 75 pounds, buy from someone who's permitted, and don't light off concussive fireworks inside the fire service area.
Hmm. Well, that's simple enough to follow, but what led up to the implementation of these new ordinances?
I was not part of it, and all I know is from what I've heard around town, so I'm not an expert in that. I know that there is a part of the community that found them to be too loud and disruptive. And I know that there were some issues with both people and pets having emotional distress around the fireworks, but I'm not sure of all of the details that led to the ordinance.
Mm, okay. Well, Lieutenant Weske, thanks so much for joining us today. I don't really have any more questions for you, but is there anything else coming up for JPD that you'd like to share with us today?
Yeah, one more thing. Thank you. I want to talk about our recruitment efforts. We have a testing coming up on June 16th and 17th. If someone is interested in becoming a law enforcement officer, one, I would recommend them come talk to any of us, ask us questions. We'll give you honest answers about what this career is like. If you already know you want to become a cop, I would encourage you to sign up. If you go to joinjpd.com, you can sign up for our testing. The initial testing is a physical test, a written test, and an oral board. They're pretty straightforward. And once you get through there, there's some, the process continues on, but that first step is pretty easy to get signed up for.
When did you know that you wanted to be a cop?
Did you ask how did I know?
When did you know, or how did you know?
Oh, when did I know? Well, you know, it was always something that was a part of my life. I had family that was in law enforcement. I worked for JPD, as you know, from the Red Wagon story. And when I was living in Minnesota and wanting to move closer to family back here in Juneau, I saw that JPD was hiring, and it was a good fit for what I had gone to school for and what I had been familiar with my whole life. And so I did just like I'm asking everybody else to do. I kind of just took that first step. I signed up, didn't know what was going to happen. And it's been a great experience and turned into a wonderful career for me.
Do you want to share the Red Wagon story, since we've been kind of dancing around it? I don't actually know the whole thing. I just have a little note.
Oh, sure. Why not? So I was in high school. I think I was 16 or 17, and I got a summer job with the Juneau Police Department working in the records division. When I got there, I'll dime her out here. Hopefully she's listening. Cheryl Nimi was working at the Juneau Police Department, and she had this Red Wagon that she had me take paperwork from the old GPD station to City Hall that I would just haul anything and everything around there. Oftentimes it was coffee and pastries from Paradise Cafe that was down there. And it was just really fun to walk down our main streets with a red wagon as a 16, 17 year old. But
yeah, there's nothing cooler than a 16 year old with a red wagon.
yeah, it was something else.
Well, Lieutenant Westgate, it's been wonderful to talk with you today. Thanks again for sharing all that great information and for answering my questions. And I hope you have a wonderful afternoon and a great month of June.
Thanks. My pleasure. Thank you.
Take care.
Take care.
You're tuned in to Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and my next guest, Nancy DeCherney, Executive Director of the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. Hi, Nancy.
Hey, how are you today?
Great, great. Happy first week of June, and we got First Friday coming up, and a fresh air market on the calendar, so lots to talk about today. Where would you like to start?
Well, let's do the First Friday. It's very exciting. We do this every other year. We do a juried show. I always love it. And this year's is particularly stunning, I think. It was juried by Allison Bremner, and the list of artists is really long. I'm going to.
Allison Bremner, that's the Caffeinated Raven, right?
Mm-hmm.
Allison, sorry, go ahead, Nancy.
Yes, all right. Yeah, you know Allison. You have that right. There are 20 some odd artists here, it looks like. You're going to see stuff from Terry Robus, Emily M. Lang. The list of people is amazing, and the artwork is stunning, and it's virtual. So you can go onto our website and see that. She will be making the announcements of who's winning the best in show and best of photography and all those sorts of things at the First Friday on at 4:30 on Friday. So go to our website and check it out. See all these things. Barnaby Brewing has Tina Halverson. She's a wood burning artist. So that's a live one. Things are starting to get lively, you know, which is sort of fun. The Juno Douglas City Museum celebrate First Friday in person at the City Museum on the 4th. You have free admission from 4 to 6:30, and they're doing 30-minute tours, behind the scene tours. So you can see how they set up their exhibits. Nico is leading them. So stop in there, and if you're sort of curious about what's behind the screen, so to speak. There's also a preview of their little free museum, you know, like little free libraries, only they're going to have a little free museum. So there you can see how they're going to work that. That'll be kind of fun. The Alaska State Museum has Santas Lani Hotch on the legacy of weaving in Klukwan. I listened into her conversation. We did the curated conversations during Wearable Art. And she talked about the weaving, the Chilkat blanket weaving, and the exhibit that's at the museum. But it's really fascinating. The exhibit is called The Spirit Wraps Around You. And she just discusses how the weaving evolved over the years, through the many years. It's quite fascinating. So and that's a live one. You can go there and see that, I guess, and enjoy it. The Juno Artist Gallery, it's Chef Steph is the featured artist for the month. She's celebrating LGBT Pride Month with Pride-themed toffee, caramels, and shortbread cups. There will be a sneak preview of two new toffee flavors. So I'm in favor of that. You should come say hi and test these out. It's COVID aware. It's from 4:30 to 6. Also, for people who don't know, the Juno Artist Gallery is a co-op, and they are interested in having other artists join them if you'd like. They'll have information there about that. So that's a place to visit. Sketch Studios having a wonderful thing called an Art Farmers Market. It's MK, Rakesh Crafts, and Celia Denton. They will be serving up real bagels, crocheted vegetables, painted flowers, and more. If it's a dry day, they'll be out in the parking lot. But if it's a wet day like today, they will be inside Sketch. And Sketch is just off that parking lot there off of Main Street. So
yeah, it looks like they got a new storefront or new siding on their building as well. It's red. So easy to find.
Oh, that makes it easier to find. So I just love the idea of crocheted vegetables.
Me
for
too.
Some reason.
And real bagels sound pretty good as well.
Yes, yes. And then go over and have the toffee. Annie Kales is celebrating Father's Day. They are featuring work by Byron Birdsall and his daughter, Courtney Birdsall Clifford. So stop in the new Annie Kales thing if you haven't been down there yet. So that's what's happening with that. And then, as you mentioned, on Saturday, we're having the first live fresh air market for the year. It'll be in what's called the Brickyard, which is that space where the buses usually park between Marine Park and the downtown library. We have like 12 different vendors, all kinds of people coming. There's fish. I don't know if people remember, there was used to be a vendor that did olive oil, different kinds of olive oils at some of our markets. She has gone out of business, but Casa Corpola has picked up that project or that thing. There's Linda Buckley is doing a book signing. There's Kelsey Erickson Kaiser, Sarah Ryan, Linda Ball. There's all kinds of things. And you can go on our website and sort of see like a little catalog of what's coming. So if you go onto the Jack and then type in fresh air markets, you'll get there. I'm excited about having these. We're going to, after we get this one, then we're going to go over and do them by Centennial Hall like we've done in the past.
Okay. And tell me again where the Brickyard is. Is that that new-ish area right there beside the library?
This is where, like, you've never noticed it before because usually it has buses parked on it, but it doesn't. Mm-hmm. when you're walking from Marine Park towards the library, it's down there. There's a statue, the sculpture of the miners and all that.
Oh,
it's
yes.
Yeah. Possessed. Yeah.
Got it.
It's really nice. We did two of them, one there last year, and it's a really nice space for things to happen. So I'm looking forward to it. So we just need a real nice day, or even a day that's not quite as rainy as Monday was. But anyway, so things are really starting to get exciting. People, it's exciting to see people out and about. It's exciting to see restaurants open. Concerts are starting, that sort of thing. We might be on the back, like coming back.
I think there are signs of life. There are signs of activity. People are out and about. And I love the idea of this fresh air market. Hopefully, if it is raining, people will have tents and rain jackets and can make do anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Nancy, thanks. We'll be moisturized. Nancy, thanks so much for joining me today. And thanks, as always, for the first Friday roundup. I love getting the scoop from you. So appreciate your time today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Good talking to you.
Yep. Have a good one.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.